3 o'clock, so we're gonna start. Thank you all for joining us for this next 201 session, which is producing professional games in a box. I'm sharing some slides, which should be titled "Inside the Box Thinking." Got a fantastic panel with me here today. So we've got Rex Brynan, Tom Fisher, and Mike Young. Just to make everybody aware, Tom, if you can see, he's on a camera. He's in a slightly difficult situation right now, but with a power cut and a few issues at home, so he's on a cell conducting this part of the presentation. So he's going to say, I'm going to pass to Tom in just a moment. We're going to go kick off this session. Tom's going to have his video on for a moment. He's going to be turning it off just to preserve the bandwidth and power for where he's located for the session. So a huge hand respect to Tom, battling through a number of things this morning over in Canada to join us for this session. So thank you, Tom, for all your efforts to support this session. The running order today, we'll be going through with Tom, and then Rex, and then to Mike. So what we'll do is we'll just put our videos on for when we need to communicate. If you've got any questions you want to ask throughout the session as we go, we're going to take those at the end. I've put it into the chat. I'm going to repost it here for those that have just joined us. But basically, just highlight in the chat question in capitals, and then we can basically take those questions and feed them through at the end. Without further ado, then I'm going to hand over to Tom. Take it away with your slides, and just tell me to move on to the next slide, and I'll control that on my side. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Colin. Unfortunately for everyone, I have to turn my camera off just in case. I know you will miss my beautiful face, but the slides are more important right now. Anyway, I'm just going to quickly flip over to my PDF slide so I can see what it is that is coming up. I'm Tom Fisher, game designer out of Montreal in Canada, unfortunately living through a power failure and loads of different things that prevent me from going to an internet cafe at the moment. So while I am doing a little bit of outside the box and outside the house thinking, we're going to be talking about how to think inside the box. Please do let me know if my audio cuts out at any moment so that we make sure I'm clear, because I'm not sure how... 100% my connection is right now. So if you wouldn't mind moving to the next slide, your box is no longer your game slide. Much as my situation is right now, where I have absolutely no control over the power company, nor my stepson getting COVID, and my dog having come home from surgery, once you put a game out there, it is completely beyond your control. And unfortunately, as opposed to games that we ourselves will be facilitating, you're not included in the box. And so any box game really has to go through a few extra steps that we could otherwise get away with, because any number of us who have facilitated these games, we know how to think on the fly. And if a rule is not quite up to hoyle, we can certainly adjust it on the fly. Once that box is out of our hands, the perception of the players and the engagement of the players is very dependent on the product that we're putting together. So first and foremost, playtest, and playtest some more is really the route that you absolutely need to go beyond what you would have for one of your own games that you are facilitating, because no game, just as no plan survives contact with the enemy, no game survives contact with a player. There's always going to be something. So the more playtesting that you can do, and you should do, the better off you will be for that final product. Now, there's a Canadian company that put a Kickstarter out a few years ago, and they're found at failfaster.ca. And they put together this journal for playtesting that is a great little tool, beautiful little utility, that either in PDF form or physically, where you can take down your notes in a very organized fashion. So I would very much suggest going to take a look at that. Now, when you're playtesting, internally, especially because we have a tendency of knowing exactly what we wanted the rules to say, it behooves us to read the rules as we are playing and playtest exactly the rules as they are played. And then moving forward, as we go externally to the blind playtest, where we are not facilitating players, have them step through the rules as written, and you'll be able to pick up right away what the problems might be in the rules as is. And if I had to list a top three of what to collect when it is that you are playtesting, first and foremost, it's player behavior. And I recall the very beginnings of Aftershock and Rex's students playing it with him facilitating. And I was sitting in the back of the conference room just noting the way that the players were interacting with the game. And that will tell you most of what you need to know in terms of the way that your game is being received. And then be sure to collect every single player suggestion, whether good or bad. If it's a bad suggestion, it might suggest or indicate that there's a truck passing in the background here. It might indicate that your rules are pointing a player in a direction you might not want them to go, but they might also turn around and come up with some great ideas that you never thought of. And so please be sure to take those in note and collect all of their suggestions moving forward. If we could go to the next slide about rules, I think Rex is going to discuss a little bit more in detail the rules and rules writing of the game. But from a point of view of the development side, because I design games, but I also develop them, there are a few, three quick rules that I will fall back on. And that's that visuals, and I should mention good visuals, can save the player time and headache. Having some kind of game setup or how to start guide with a visual of things and how they should be laid out is such an absolute boon and relatively easy to do either with a photograph or in whatever graphic software you might be using. And then being clear and concise is absolutely the way to go. During Stephanie's presentation for Connections Next yesterday, she mentioned the 10-word rule. Whenever you can, fit it in as few words as possible, because if you're throwing too many words in, you might open up the possibility for misinterpretation. But be as absolutely clear as possible in a very stepwise technical writing fashion. For what to include in the rules, I mentioned the how to start in a game setup, but using gameplay examples in your rule set, having quick start rules, so rather than having to read through the entire rule book for more detail, have a setup so that they can get going within half an hour or so, and a rule summary or player aid either at the back of the rules or as a separate sheet is such a fundamental boon. It's you cannot underestimate the power that will have. If we could move on to the next slide, which is about building the box. When it comes time to actually putting together the boxed product, there are a few resources that we can go to. I've listed a few of them here. I have not included self-production, which is a possibility, but unless you have a shop that will be creating your own boxes or has good printers, and by good printers, I mean professional level printers to really get them out there, because now we're talking about a box product that we would go out to a larger market. There are a few go-tos. I believe most people might have heard of the Game Crafter, which is a really, really great site for prototyping and has a lot of options available, whether they be physical components or the ability to print boards, maps, mats, chits, stickers, any number of things. The magic kit that DSTL has used and has gone out into the marketplace was built using the Game Crafter, as has Aftershock. but there are a few other options out there, each with their pros and cons. I would strongly suggest taking a really quick snapshot of these just so you get the websites up and running, because I've transferred over to using BoardGamesMaker.com, which is a concern, but they are a concern out of China, as opposed to the GameCrafter, which is out of the US. I can use that because I have more familiarity with graphics software, and so they're a little bit less friendly, but they are cheaper than the GameCrafter. However, as we've seen in these COVID times, logistics can be a problem coming out of China, so it might be quite literally on the slow boat to China. So you have to be mindful of that. The GameCrafter is terrific with great design tools that they have available. It handles sales and distribution, but man, oh man, are they expensive. At the end of the day, if you are trying to make a profit out of a game, GameCrafter is great for prototyping. You're probably not going to retire on the monies that you get out of there, and shipping is nuts coming out of the U.S. Spielmaterial is located in Europe and is somewhat similar to Board Games Maker, but they have far fewer options. Then you can always go the route of the existing game companies and publishers. Problem there is that you're losing control, but if you have access to GMT and are accepted by GMT, you can be on their P500 program where they get 500 orders, then they'll print it. Or you can go full-blown with a developer like Panda GM, which is a Canadian company but manufactures in China. The downside there is you need to order a minimum of 1,500 copies of your game. And I know my basement won't hold all of that. So if you have a small warehouse, then you can deal with them. Otherwise, you will be looking elsewhere. But if you're looking for a place to start, the GameCrafter is great. Asterisk being they're expensive, but for prototyping, they're probably the easiest to use, especially if you don't know graphic software. If we can move forward to the free art resources, I'll invite you to screenshot these. I've put a number of free or almost free resources that are there for icons and art assets that you can get a hold of. You want to make sure, however, that the licenses cover your ability to distribute these images either with attribution or without commercially. You can get into a very sticky situation if you do not provide attribution and you're making money off of something, because then they can claim it. Now, to solve this problem, one of my team members, Catherine, brought to my attention this fabulous website called midjourney.com that operates through Discord, and they provide AI art. If you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, and then each picture will come up one by one, of which there are five, Colin. As Colin is stepping through these images, you can see a Congolese refugee camp, futuristic urban warfare and mecha warfare. You have refugees who are crossing a blasted plain, and then migrants who are crossing across Mexico to the U.S. border. All of these images are completely free to use and generated by AI. This is the midjourney.com. Because you have an open license to use these, it is not an exclusive license. But if you need any image, all you need to do is describe these images with prompts, and you will have these available to you at your fingertips. It is a tremendous, tremendous tool. If you get nothing else out of this when you're putting your game together, use this site. It will solve so many of your problems. If you want to step forward just very quickly into graphic design 001, the next slide. when you're putting that box together, you have to understand that visuals become quite an important part of it, both in terms of the sales and in terms of the understanding of the game. So we very much, all of us, judge a book by its cover, because we are biologically driven to do this. And if you'll see on the right-hand side of the slide, the same words, Connection UK, written in different color and different fonts, will give completely different meanings. At the top in black, Connections UK looks very much look like a comic book connection. Blue Connections UK is sci-fi, maybe a little bit of Star Trek working into there. Connections UK in script sounds very much like you're making romantic connections. And Connections UK in green, could that be a wargaming convention dealing with the 40s? Is that some kind of typewriter thing going on? All of these pieces of the puzzle, font, color, have tremendous effect on people's understanding. If you could move on to the next slide, just in being aware of time. Something you should be thinking about when you are designing something is crap design, which deals with very much contrast. Have good contrast between different sections so that you understand what a header is versus text. Repetition or consistency. If you are using one scheme somewhere, keep on using that scheme. Alignment. Please have one thing aligned to at least one other thing so it makes sense. It makes it easier and takes off cognitive load from the player and the rules reader. And proximity, meaning as simple as like things. And sorry, I'm getting a phone call as this. That, am I back with everyone?
Yeah, we can still hear you loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. It was a matter of which button do I press. Well, I don't want to end this meeting, so. If you look at the sign on the left hand side, you'll see parking signs the old way, no sort of hierarchy, and then a very organized fashion of looking at things. And if you look at the rule books on the right, you'll see at the very top a wall of text, which is going to almost guarantee that your players are not reading everything. Getting the same call over and over again. I apologize tremendously for this. Where text is in proximity with the images that go directly with it. Other text is boxed off, so it is together. So it makes things very clear for the player to be able to discern exactly what is what. On the next slide, you will see a brilliant resource that I promise I am not getting any royalties from them, but this is a book put out by Robin Williams, not the actor, but a female designer, which is a beautiful summary of how to use graphic design rules for non-designers. And it maybe it's $15 or about $25 US-ish or so. I strongly suggest picking this up. And before I eat into other people's time too much, you can see the software packages that are there that are suggested, including thegamecrafter.com, because they do a lot of it. I will end on that footing. So please screenshot this, and we will pass things along to Rex, who I'm sure will have a number of comments.
Well, it will come as no surprise to anyone who's seen Tom and I design games together that I'm essentially just going to reiterate the points that he's made. Most of my game designs are bespoke game designs, one-offs for a particular situation. I'm almost always there to facilitate them in person. And the absolute key difference between that and doing a small print run of a game for niche audiences, Aftershock is, I think, when I last checked, 428 sales. Matrix and Construction Kit is 98. Is that when you're not there, you lose control of everything. And so the game has to run well without you there to interpret the rules, explain things, tweak the rules because of emerging situation or what have you. And that's really the fundamental difference. That means not only do you really have to play test the game in advance because you can't tweak it on the day, it also means the rules have to be absolutely clear. And I want to underscore how difficult that is. I teach a course in game design. Virtually none of the students after 13 weeks produce rules that are clear enough. I mean, some are much better than others, but despite me telling them how important it is, despite Phil Sabin telling them in the textbook how important and difficult it is, they're never as clear as they should be. We are coming Nineveh, which is a commercial game I'm a co-designer of. We probably have spent 3 years tweaking the rules after Brian Train, one of the other co-designers, did a terrific job of writing up the current version. And I was still tweaking the rules on the page proofs when they went to the publisher a couple of months ago. So rules are really, really difficult to do. And you have to design the rules simultaneously for a brilliant rules lawyer who will leverage every ambiguity in the rules and Mr. Bean, right? Both of those people will be playing your game, the brilliant rules lawyer and Mr. Bean, and they both have to understand the same thing from the rules. Second thing I'd say is it's really useful to befriend or blackmail a graphic designer. Because visuals matter and they're expensive. Graphic design is really expensive. And unclear graphic presentation will ruin your game. You also have to get the graphics from somewhere. Tom mentioned a number of great sources. I'll mention another one. If you're working with a partner or a sponsor, they may have a photo bank. So Aftershock, most of the images came from the World Food Program, who, because the game itself raises funds for UN agencies, including WFP, gave us access to their photo bank for free. And that had like 100,000 keyword searchable, beautiful, beautiful images in it. It would have made the game so much easier to do. So that is essentially, it's the same thing Tom said. You're not going to be there. It all has to be super clear. It has to be super clear visually. The rules have to be super, super clear. You have to work all of the kinks out. The issues about who you go with, how easy the trade-off between being cheaper versus GameCrafter is really, really, really easy to use and quite powerful. That's something which I think you've got to make personally, or whether your local printer can do stuff for you. It depends also on the components of your game and what the publisher / self-publisher can provide for you. That matters too. I've also done work on serious digital game design and with Nineveh commercial game design. So I could comment on the differences between smaller production and those bigger productions there, but I won't do that now unless there's any questions about them. Instead, I will hand over to Mike.
Thanks very much. I'm Mike Young, and I'm going to talk today about this game, which I hope you can all see, Strike, which came about through DSTL producing a successful war game, which went to the Strike Experimental Group, SEG, and they liked it so much they wanted 6 copies of it. So I decided we couldn't really have make by hand 6 more copies. So I decided to try and publish the game using BoardGameMakers.com. And the game has spread from word of mouth from more throughout the army and abroad. And people, as they saw the game, people have said they like it, they want more copies. So I've ended up making about 30 copies of the game. Making about 30 copies of it. So the game, as I said, looks like this. It's been made by BoardGamesMakers.com, the army like to have large maps, and this game was originally built with large maps, so it's got the disadvantage that I couldn't fit the maps into the box. So the very large game came with a very large box with the maps in, which unfortunately is this size. And so I've also had the advantage, because it was being sold because it was spreading the way it was by word of mouth with people, and people wrote to me individually saying, can I have a copy of the game? I was then able to say yes, and I can come round and I can give you a little demo, which meant that I could get the people into the game. Now, by giving them a PowerPoint and by going through, stepping the game through with them. So I made a sort of PowerPoint lesson of the game. And that way I was able to go round, and that meant that I wasn't, people didn't have to rely entirely on the rules. That being said, I did make some of the games I was sent to places I wasn't able to facilitate with a PowerPoint. And so I had to make copies. I had to make the rules, and the rules had to be explicit and well illustrated, as I hope you can see here. Lots of illustrations and just diagrams throughout to help people understand what was going on. It had a large number of counters, as we and so what I did there was I made counters with which and count and laminated parts which you could to stick the counters on with blue tack. So that's the best way to store large numbers of counters. That meant that the game was made in a hybrid manner. Half of it, the counters, were manufactured in China, and the box was manufactured in China. And then when the boxes arrived, we ripped them open and we inserted the quick reference sheets and the rules and the and the sheets, which we had to make ourselves in-house by spending some time at the laminator. So it wasn't a whole game that we made, but it was part of the game. It was a sort of compromise. And we produced things for a game that was spread by word of mouth. So that's the strike game. I think we're out of time now. So I'm afraid I can't say any more, but thank you very much. We've got time for about two questions, haven't we, Colin?
Absolutely. It's a very quick canter all the way through those sessions. So just to iterate a few points, I've not seen any questions come from my chat. If anyone else can see questions in the chat, let me know, but I've got none in my actual chat. With the particular, just to focus on the strike one there and portability, the US Army University has taken Mike's strike game and produced a vassal version of it and has modified that. And actually it's been then moved on for other areas of development and use within the US Army in particular. And I think one of the things that we often find ourselves in the professional games is that we end up making box games by accident, not by design. So Mike's original game there, was designed for analytical purpose, and then through sharing it and people being aware of it, has become a pseudo boxed game. In this case, in particular for the US Army, then used it then for training education purposes using Vassal, which is fantastic to see. And I think what we want to do with this session, and Tom, huge respect for those slides and all those details, those information, and for everyone on this call, those slides will be available on the Connections website to actually know where to start and utilize these things. I mean, I got introduced to Games Crafter through Rex and Tom when we talked about the Magic Game Construction Kit. I mean, you know, there's some challenges there when people are trying to order Magic and have to wait for the certain kind of bits and pieces to be in stock before people can get them. So there's other issues there, not just around shipping, but also trying to get hold of those games. So that's really, really useful.